Chapter 13 In the Great Head. Candy had always prided herself upon having a vivid imagination. When, for instance, she privately compared her dreams with those her brothers described over the breakfast table or her friends at school exchanged at break, she always discovered her own night visions were a lot wilder and weirder than anybody else's. But there was nothing she could remember dreaming by day or night that came close to the sight that greeted her in the great head of the Yebedim day. It was a city built from the litter of the sea. The street beneath her feet was made from timbers that had clearly been in the water for a long time, and the walls were lined with barnacle-encrusted stone. There were three columns supporting the roof made of coral fragments cemented together. They were buzzing hives of life unto themselves, their elaborately constructed walls pierced with dozens of windows from which light poured. There were three main streets that wound up and around these coral hives, and they were all lined with habitations and thronged with the Yebedim Day's citizens. As far as Candy could see, there were plenty of people who resembled folks she might have expected to see on the streets of Chickentown, give or take a sartorial detail, a hat, a coat, a wooden snout. But for every one person that looked perfectly human, there were two who looked perfectly other than human. The children of a thousand marriages between humankind and the great bestiary of the Aberrat were abroad in the streets of the city. Among those who passed her as she ventured up the street were creatures which seemed related to fish, to birds, to cats and dogs and lions and toads, and those were just the species she recognized. There were many more she did not, forms of face that her dream life had never come near to showing her. Though she was cold, she didn't care. Though she was weary to her marrow and lost, oh, so very lost, she didn't care. This was a new world rising before her, and it was filled with every kind of diversity. A beautiful woman walked by, wearing a hat like an aquarium. In it was a large fish whose poignant expression bore an uncanny resemblance to the woman on whose head it was balanced. A man half Candy's size ran by, with a second man half the first fellow's size sitting in the hood of his robe, throwing nuts into the air. A creature with red ladders for legs was stalking its way through the crowd farther up the street, its enormous coxcomb bright orange. A cloud of blue smoke blew by, and as it passed, a foggy face appeared in the cloud and smiled at Candy before the wind dispersed it. Everywhere she looked, there was something to amaze. Besides the citizens, there were countless animals in the city, wild and domesticated. White-faced monkeys like troops of clowns were on the roofs bearing their scarlet bottoms to passers-by. Beasts the size of chinchillas but resembling golden lions ran back and forth along the power cables looped between the houses, while a snake, pure white but for its turquoise eyes, wove cunningly between the feet of the crowd, chattering like an excited parrot. To her left, a thing that might have had a lobster for a mother and Picasso for a father was clinging to a wall, drawing a flattering self-portrait on the white plaster with a stick of charcoal. To her right, a man with a firebrand was trying to persuade a cow with an infestation of yellow grasshoppers leaping over its body to get out of his house. The grasshoppers weren't the only insects in the city. Far from it. The air was filled with buzzing life. High overhead, birds dined on clouds of mites that blazed like pinpricks of fire. Butterflies the size of Candy's hand moved just above the heads of the crowd, and now and then alighted on a favored head as though it were a flower. Some were transparent, their veins running with brilliant blue blood. Others were fleshy and fat. These, the preferred food of a creature that was as decadently designed as a peacock, its body vestigial, its tail vast, painted with colors for which Candy had no name. And on all sides, among these astonishments, were things that were absurdly recognizable. Televisions were on in many of the houses, their screens visible through undraped windows. A cartoon boy was tap-dancing on one screen, singing some sentimental song on another, and on a third a number of wrestlers fought. Humans matched with enormous striped insects that looked thoroughly bored with the proceedings. There was much else that Candy recognized. The smell of burned meat and spilled beer. The sound of boys fighting. Laughter like any other laughter. Tears like any other tears. To her amazement, she heard English spoken everywhere, though there were dozens of dialects, and of course the mouth parts that delivered the words also went some way to shape the nature of the English that was being spoken. Some of it was high and nasal, a sing-song variation that almost seemed about to become music. From other directions came a guttural version that descended at times into growls and yappings. All this, and she had advanced perhaps 50 yards into the Yebedim day. The houses at the lower end of the great head, where she was presently walking, were all red, their fronts bowed. She quickly grasped why. They were made of boats, or the remains of boats. To judge by the nets that were hung as makeshift doors, the occupants of these houses were the families of fishermen who'd settled here. They'd dragged their vessels out of the cool evening air and taken a hammer and crowbar to the cabins and the deck and hold, peeling apart the boards so as to make some kind of habitation on land. There was no order to any of this. People just seemed to take whatever space was available. How else to explain the chaotic arrangement of vessels one on top of the other? As for power, it seemed to be nakedly stolen from those higher up in the city, and therefore presumably more wealthy. Cables ran down the walls, entering houses and exiting again to provide service for the next house. It was not a foolproof system by any means. At any one moment, looking up at the hundreds, perhaps thousands, of heaped-up houses, somebody's lights were flickering, or there was an argument going on about the cables. No doubt the presence of monkeys and birds pecking at the cables or simply swinging from them did not improve matters. It was a wonder, Candy thought, that this outlandish collection of people, animals, and habitations worked at all. She couldn't imagine the people of Chickentown putting up with such chaotic diversity. What would they think of the ladder-legged creature, or the smoke creature, or the baby beast throwing nuts in the air? I need to remember as many details as I can, so when I get back home, I can tell everybody what it was like, down to the last brick, the last butterfly. I wonder, she thought to herself, if they make cameras here. If they have televisions, she reasoned, then surely they have cameras. Of course, she'd first have to find out if the few soaked and screwed-up dollars she had in the bottom of her pocket were worth anything here. If they were, and she could find somewhere to purchase a camera, then she could make a proper record of what she was seeing. Then she'd have proof, absolute proof, that this place, with all its wonders, existed. "Are you cold?" The woman who had addressed her looked as though she might have some sea skipper in her heritage. Vestigial gills ran from the lower half of her cheek into her neck, and there was a faintly mottled quality to her skin. Her eyes had a subtle cast of silver about them. "Actually, I am a little," Candy said. "Come with me. I'm Izareth." "I'm Candy Quackenbush. I'm new here." "Yes, I could tell," Izareth said. "It's cold today. The water gets up through the stones. One day this place is just going to rot and collapse on itself." "That would be a pity," Candy said. "You don't live here," Izareth said with a trace of bitterness. She led Candy to one of the houses made from fishing boats. As she followed the woman to the threshold, Candy felt just a little pang of doubt. Why was she being invited into Izareth's house so quickly without any real reason beyond that of a stranger's generosity? Izareth seemed to sense her unease. "Don't come in if you don't want to," she said. "I just thought you looked in need of a fire to warm you through." Before Candy could reply, there was a series of crashes from outside the head, accompanied by a din of yells and screams. "The dock," Candy said, looking back toward the door. Obviously, the jetty had finally given out beneath the weight of the crowd. There was a great rush of people out to see the calamity, which was, of course, only going to make matters worse out there. Izareth showed no desire to go and see what had happened. She just said, "Are you coming?" "Yes," said Candy, offering the woman a smile of thanks and following her inside. Just as Izareth had promised, there was a fire in the little hearth, which the woman fueled with a handful of what looked like dried seaweed. The kindling was consumed quickly and brightly. A soothing wave of warmth hit Candy. "Oh, that's nice," she said, warming her hands. On the floor in front of the fire was a child of perhaps 2, her features one generation further removed from the sea-dwelling origins of her grandparents, or perhaps her great-great-grandparents. "This is Maza. Maza, this is Candy. Say hello."
"Hello," said Maza.
With her duty to courtesy done, Maza returned to playing with her toys, which were little more than painted blocks of wood. One of them was a boat painted red, a crude copy, perhaps, of the vessel whose boards had built these walls. Izareth went to check on the other child in the room, a baby asleep in a cot.
"That's Nazre," she said. "She's been 6 since we came here. He was born at sea, and I believe he wants to go back there."
She bent low, talking softly to the baby.
"That's what you want, isn't it, dearling? You want to be out away from here."
"You want that too?" Candy said.
"With all my heart. I hate this place."
"Can't you leave?" Izareth shook her head.
"My husband Ruthus had a boat, and we used to fish around the outer islands where the shoals are still good. But the boat was getting old, so we came here to trade it in for a new one. We had some money from the season's fishing, and we thought we'd be able to get a good boat, but there were no new boats to be had. Nobody's building anymore, and now we're almost out of money. So my husband's working putting in toilets for folks in the towers, and I'm stuck down here with the children."
As she told her tale, she pulled back a makeshift curtain which divided the little room in 2, and, sorting through a box of garments, she selected a simple dress which she gave to Candy.
"Here," she said, "put this on. If you wear those wet clothes much longer, you'll get phlegmatic."
Gratefully, Candy put it on, feeling secretly ashamed of her initial suspicion. Izareth obviously had a good heart. She had very little to share, but what she had, she was offering.
"It suits you,"
Izareth said, as Candy tied a simple rope belt around her waist. The fabric of the dress was brown, but it had a subtle iridescence to it, a hint of blue and silver in its weave.
"What's the currency here?" Candy asked.
Plainly, Izareth was surprised by the question, understandably so, but she answered anyway.
"It's a zem," she said, "or a patterzem, which is 100 zem note."
"Oh,
why do you ask this question?"
Candy dug in the pocket of her jeans.
"It's just that I have some dollars," she said.
"You have dollars?" Izareth replied, her mouth wide in astonishment.
"Yes, a few."
Candy pulled the sodden notes out and carefully spread them on the hearth where they steamed in front of the fire. Izareth's eyes didn't leave the bills from the moment they appeared. It was almost as though she was witnessing a miracle.
"Where did you get those?"
she said, her voice breathless with astonishment. Finally, she tore her gaze from the hearth and looked up at Candy.
"Wait," she said. "Is it possible?"
"Is what possible?"
"Do you come from the hereafter?"
Candy nodded.
"Actually, I come from a place called America." "America?"
Izareth spoke the word like a prayer.
"You have dollars, and you come from America?"
She shook her head in disbelief. Candy went down on her haunches before the fire and peeled the now almost dried dollars off the hearth.
"Here,"
she said, offering them to Izareth.
"You have them."
Izareth shook her head, her expression one of almost religious awe.
"No, no, I couldn't. Not dollars. Angels use dollars, not schismet like me."
"Take it from me," Candy said. "I'm not an angel. Very far from it.
And what's a schismet?"
"My people are schismet, or they were, generations ago.
The bloodline's been diluted over the years. You have to go back to my great-grandfather for a pure schismet."
She looked melancholy, an expression which suited the form of her face better than any other.
"Why so sad?"
"I just wish I could go back into the deeps and make my home there, away from all this."
Isereth cast her sad eyes toward the window, which was without frames or panes. The crowd outside moved like a relentless parade. Candy could see how hard it would be to exist in this tiny hovel with the twilight throng moving up and down the street outside all the hours that God sent.
"When you say the deeps," Candy replied, "do you mean the sea?"
"Yes, Mama Isabella.
The schismet had cities down there, deep in the ocean, beautiful cities made of white stone."
"Have you ever seen them?"
"No, of course not. After 2 generations you lose the way of the fish. I would drown like you."
"So what can you do?"
"Live on a boat as close as we can to the deeps. Live with the rhythm of Mother Isabella beneath us."
"Well, perhaps the dollars will help you and Rufus to buy a boat," Candy said. Candy handed Isereth a 10 and 1 single, keeping 6 for herself. Isereth laughed out loud, the music in her laughter so infectious that her daughter Maza started laughing too.
$11? 11! It would buy 2 boats, 3 boats. It's like 11 Patersam. More, I think.
She looked up, suddenly anxious.
"And this is really for me?"
she said, as though she was afraid the gift would be reclaimed.
"It's all yours," Candy said, feeling a little odd about sounding too magnanimous.
After all, it was only $11.
"I'm going to spend a little piece of this one," Isereth said, selecting a single and pocketing the rest. "I'm going to buy some food. The children haven't eaten this day. I think you haven't either."
Her eyes were shining, their joy increased by the silvery luster that was the gift of her schismet breeding.
"Will you stay with them while I go out?" she said.
"Of course," Candy said. She suddenly realized she was starving.
"And Maza?"
"Yes, Mama?"
"Will you be kind to the lady from the hereafter while I fetch bread and milk?"
"Grish fritters,"
said Maza.
"Is that what you want? Grish fritters with noga seeds?"
"Grish fritter with noga seeds! Grish fritter with noga seeds!"
"I won't be long," Isereth said.
"We'll be fine," Candy said, sitting down beside the child in front of the fire.
"Won't we, Maza?"
The child smiled again, her tiny teeth semi-translucent, carrying a hint of blue.
"Grish fritters with noga seeds," she said. "All for me!"